Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. Jenna Wolf alongside, as always, Nick Wright, Kevin Wobbs. We've got Chris Broussard with us on a rainy Tuesday morning up here in the Northeast. What are you doing, Wilds? I'm 8 seconds in. You can't start by making fun of me. I don't point anymore because I get the pointing all wrong. We got a lot coming up this morning. Zion put on a show last night, but did he quell everybody's concerns? Other things in the NBA, the Sixers, another brutal night for them, although it ended better, but we will talk about what's happening to the Philadelphia 76ers. And Michael Vick will join us to discuss the pressure that Lamar Jackson seems to be under heading into this season. Speaking of pressure, I have an hour to fit in all of this right here, and I got Wilds making fun of me, so let's get started. In the NBA, Lakers taking on the Utah Jazz, and Lakers taking out the Utah Jazz as well, courtesy of Anthony Davis. The brow went off, 42 points to go along with 12 boards. AD's number two, LeBron, just kidding, Nick. Chipped in 22-8-9. The Lakers get the win, 116-108, and in so doing, they clinch the one seed in the West for the first time since, get this, 2010. Nick, it's no question this team goes as LeBron goes, but we're three bubble games in, and the spotlight seems to be tilting to Anthony Davis. You think, Nick, anyone can beat the Lakers if he plays the way he did last night?
No, of course not. Absolutely not. And first of all, as you alluded to, Jenna, congratulations to the Lakers. First time they have the one seed since 2010. It's the third time a LeBron James-led team has had a one seed in the last decade. 2016, he had the one seed. I think they won the title that year. 2013, they won the seed. I'm pretty sure. You can check me on that, Broussard. They won the title that year. So we'll see if that continues. And, by the way, congrats to the Lakers as a whole. They clinched the one seed out West before the Bucks clinched out East, which I think a lot of people would have thought would have been an impossibility at the beginning of the season. But I want to start here because we have my dear friend Chris Broussard here. Chris, by my calendar,
that's always a bad sign.
You've got 11 days. And because I want nothing but the best for you, because you've been so kind to me over these last 4 years since I've gotten to know you, I am as a friend extending the olive branch. You've got 11 days before the playoffs tip off. You're allowed to change your preseason and midseason prediction until those playoffs tip off on the 15th of August. Now that you have seen what Anthony Davis is looking like, LeBron clearly slowly ramping up, I would just, as a friend, as someone who loves and cares about you, I would recommend strongly you do what you know your head is telling you to do, which is switch your prediction from the Clippers to the Lakers so you can end the season on the right side of history. So, of course, Jenna, the Lakers are unbeatable when Anthony Davis plays like that. And I want to know if Chris Broussard wants to join me on that correct side of the argument.
Well, I appreciate the olive branch, Nick. And it really would be what my heart would say. Because, look, in the beginning of the season, I was looking for every reason to pick the Lakers over the Clippers. And then as I watched, as I thought, as my head guided me, I said, the Clippers are the better team. And I still feel that way. Now, I don't think they're better by a mile. I've never said the Lakers don't have a shot. I think this is going to be a mammoth series and a tough series, whichever team wins. So I give the Lakers a chance for sure. But I still think the Clippers are the better team, 1 through 9 or whatever they'll end up playing in the playoffs. But this is the formula I've been saying all year. If the Lakers are going to beat the Clippers, this is the formula. Anthony Davis has got to be a monster. I'm not worried at all about LeBron, even as he's looked at times subpar in the bubble. And he started the game subpar. He was very passive, just taking his time, getting everybody involved. And obviously he came alive in the fourth quarter. That clearly is by design. What I loved, though, was Anthony Davis coming alive in the fourth quarter. What he did in the first three quarters was great. But I've seen that almost every night. I needed to see it in the fourth because that's when they're going to need him in the playoffs, particularly against the LA Clippers. And I like that he did not defer to LeBron in the fourth. He entered the game in the last 8 minutes. He scores 8 points all in the last 4 minutes of the game, including six in the last 43 seconds. He wasn't looking to give it to LeBron. He wasn't backing up saying, King, you do it. If you need me, I'm here. He was the aggressor, and that is what I liked most about it. But the question is, can he do that against the Clippers? Because he's only got 10 points in the four games in the fourth quarter. Mm. He should be able to, but he hasn't yet.
Okay, but I would argue he will when needed in the postseason if, assuming, and it's a big assumption, the Clippers get to the conference finals in order to play the Lakers. And listen, if you can do it wild to Rudy Gobert, the guy who's won a couple Defensive Player of the Year awards, is going to finish top three this year, then there's nobody in the league he can't do it to. He came out yesterday, Wilds, with a mindset of, I am, after only making two shots against the Raptors, I think he took 14 in the first quarter. Only James Harden has taken more shots in a quarter in a game thus far this year. So, yeah, if you can do it to Rudy Gobert, with respect to Ivica Zubac, I don't think he's going to have much resistance for him when they play the Clippers, if they play the Clippers, Wilds.
All right, so what do you want to do now, Nick? You've got five games left. The number one seed is locked in the West. There's no point in going after the number one seed with the Bucks. That wouldn't work anyways. My suggestion is that you play like a guy named Todd at the YMCA. Todd is usually wearing Asics and running shorts, sometimes a tank top, with a local marathon race that he just finished. And when you play 5-on-5 versus Todd and you yell at Todd to hustle back, Todd always gives you like, hey, man, I'm just trying to get a workout in, man. Trying to do some free weights and trying to get a workout in and then maybe hit the sauna. That's it. I'm just trying not to get hurt out here. So that's what I think the Lakers are the new Todd. You don't want – LeBron said health is wealth.
No,
they just have to play clean. So the question is, do they actually – is health – the idea of health, do they achieve that by playing hard? That's what we hear in football. You got to play full speed or you get hurt. Or do they take their foot off the gas and kind of like, hey, guys, no charges, you know, no diving, nothing Dennis Rodman would do on the court. What would you do?
So two points on this. One is, if you watch these games closely, you can already see LeBron is being extra cautious about getting to misquote Jada Pinkett Smith in any entanglements on the court. There was a moment yesterday where he got knocked down. And I forget which player it was on the Jazz. I think it was Royce O'Neal, but I might be wrong, was about to fall on him. And because there's no crowd, you could hear LeBron shout out to the opposing player where he was and where he needed to step. He goes, step left, because he's beneath him. So I think LeBron is going to be very careful about not tweaking or not putting himself in a position diving for a loose ball now that they have clinched the one seed. But Broussard, if we can put up that schedule again, because they have done what you came to do in the regular season, which is get the one seed, I think they can manipulate the bracket a bit. And by that I mean, you have a back-to-back OKC in Houston. It's in the Lakers' best interest to lose to Houston. They have the one seed either way, and they want Houston to move up to the three line instead of staying at the 4-5. You want to beat Denver, so they move down. You certainly, at the end of the year, if the Kings could potentially get in that play-in, you'd want them involved there. So I think if you're going to rest guys, you do it strategically based on trying to manipulate the bracket a bit, because you've earned that by having the one seed with five to play. So I would rest against Houston. I would certainly rest the final game of the year against the Kings, Broussard.
Yeah, but I don't like that mentality of worrying about where everybody else is. They have to feel confident. We can beat whoever. I don't care if we play Houston in the second round. So be it. We're the best team in the West. That's the mentality they have to have. And also, they still have, like everybody, they've been off for 4 months. So they still need to continue to develop that chemistry together. I think they'll rest a game or two here or there. But for the most part, they need to continue playing. And that's been their mentality throughout the regular season. So I think that'll continue.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Lamar Jackson took home MVP honors last season. Wasn't enough to satisfy the Ravens quarterback, who saw his season cut short by the Titans. Hey, it was an early playoff exit for Lamar for the second straight year. How much does that bother him? Well, it bothers him a lot, apparently. This from Lamar this week. I think about it a lot. To be honest with you, that's where I want to be. That's when everything gets crucial. It's tough because it's win or go home. I'm tired of going home. I just can't wait to get back in that same spot and perform at a whole other level. Nick, he's still young, Lamar Jackson, entering his third year in the league, but coming off an MVP season. How much pressure should Lamar Jackson feel to lead the Ravens on a deep playoff run heading into this season?
Well, he's got to win a playoff game. And this is a time where you become a victim of your own success to a degree because he's started less than 30 games in the NFL. But when you take a team that's dead in the water in your rookie year and lead them to the playoffs, and then you have the worst game of your career up to that point in the playoffs, and then you follow that up by leading a team to a 14-2 record-breaking season, you're the unanimous league MVP, and then you have your worst game of the year in that playoff game. You start the game off with a pick. You throw a back-breaking pick at the end. You get stuffed on a couple fourth and ones. The Wolves are going to be at the gate for him, Wilds, because a lot of people have Lamar has proven them wrong. And folks hate admitting they're wrong. People hate being wrong. I'm going to be bothered by the fact that I accidentally just said Nerlens Noel was on the Nuggets instead of the Thunder for the next 3 weeks. And so, I mean, give an opinion. No, it's going to kill me. All my analysis worked except for the fact that I said the wrong team. But it's not the point. So folks crushed Lamar coming into the league. So they don't want to give him his due. And Wilds, if he has another great regular season and then falls flat in the playoffs, people are going to annihilate him. He knows that. And so there is immense pressure on him. They don't have to win the Super Bowl, but he has to have a really good game in the playoffs and win a playoff game, or else there's going to be this yeah, but attached to him. Until that changes.
Yeah, you know whose fault this is? It's a little bit of your fault in the Kansas City Chiefs, Nick. If Patrick Mahomes didn't win the Super Bowl, I feel like Lamar is able to take a breath and be like, look, we're just young quarterbacks. We're trying to figure it out. So, Mike, the question I have to you is, if you're buying the Mahomes like parallel, was there a guy that you judged yourself against in the league? And if that person had success, did you internalize that and did that put more pressure on you?
Well, it put more pressure on you to go out and win a playoff game because you watch those who come before you. You see them make it to, you know, the postseason. You see what it's like. You see the atmosphere and it's like, man, that's where I want to end up. You know, Nick said something that was very true. You can become a victim of your own success. You know, my second year, you know, we was able to put a pile of wins together throughout the season. And, you know, we found ourselves in the playoffs in Green Bay. And we beat Green Bay in the playoffs.
And from there, I just thought that that playoff success would come year in and year out. I did win a game in 2004, but you know, you get used to that success. So I see what happened to Lamar in the regular season. Things came so easy, you know, that, you know, he thought it was going to be a you know, walk in the park come playoff time. But that's when you got to step it up. That's when things get, you know, magnified and amplified. You know, you got to be ready for those moments, man. And, I know why he's itching to get back out there, because you only get one shot. You know, it's one and done in the playoffs, and it's something that'll haunt you for the entire year. So I know what those seasons felt like when we didn't make the playoffs because you wanted to make it so bad. And then when you, like I said, when you put together, you know, such a stellar season, you want to cap it off with something great. But this is the thing that Lamar can hang his hat on. After Patrick Mahomes won the MVP, he followed it up with a Super Bowl. You know, high expectations, but it's something to you know, kind of, well, you know, use as a tool, you know, to get to where you need to go for this season.
And then he followed the Super Bowl up with a $500 million contract, which if Lamar follows that, if the Ravens win the Super Bowl, Lamar will be able, if he wants it, he'll get the contract Mahomes got. Like, if he wants it, if they win the Super Bowl, he absolutely has no reason not to ask for that same exact deal, and the Ravens would give it to him. So there's that internal pressure. But, Mike, I want to kick it back to you for a second, because you and Lamar get talked about alongside each other a lot. But what I was talking about with there being a certain, you know, almost cottage industry of not just fans but some media members that seemed to be waiting for him to fail, I felt similarly with you. Folks that just said, you got to win from the pocket. You have to win this style of quarterbacking. Did you feel that? Did you feel like there was almost a, it's never going to be enough unless I do win the Super Bowl to prove to these folks you can win a different style of quarterbacking?
Yeah, because I came into the game playing a different style of quarterbacking, like you said, I heard all types of whispers and noise all around me that this style wouldn't last. So constantly I was trying to prove that this style could last and could win football games. So everything I was doing, you know, the motivation was coming from a lot of different places. But I think the main source was just from, you know, from the media, from the fans, from the crowd, from people who, you know, felt like that, you know, I couldn't last 16 games. And a majority of the time I didn't last 16, but I was there for, you know, at least 90% of the season. But yeah, you know, it's unfair that, you know, you got to continuously prove yourself in all areas, you know, from your style of play to, you know, the way you go out and play the game and how you, you know, you go out and make things happen from a competent level. You know, it's just all types of pressures that you have to deal with as a quarterback, especially when you look different, you know, when you play different. But it's all a part of it, and it made the game more exciting to me. It made me, you know, put more time and effort into my craft, you know, and it brought out the best out of me, so to speak.
Mike, I think what you said about living up to those expectations, especially coming out of school, is so important. I want to break up an old tweet of yours from back in 2016 when Lamar was still at Louisville. You wrote, Lamar is 5 times better than I was at Virginia Tech, enough said. You saw this coming when Lamar was in college. He's 2 seasons now under his belt, coming off an MVP year. Do you think he's lived up to those expectations, the kind you just talked about so far? Or would he need to make a deep playoff run for you to grade him higher than he is right now?
Yeah, Jenna, I think he's lived up to those expectations. You know, actually, he's superseded those expectations. And that was a bold statement that I made on that day. But when I'm watching a guy, you know, put together a remarkable performance against one of the best teams in the country. And, you know, I think the biggest caveat was that he was doing it in a spread system. And I'm like, if any team in the NFL, you know, not college right now, because he's mastered the college game, this game shows that. If any team in the NFL bring him in and run that same system, he's going to look the same. And that wasn't the case for me. I came in, had Dan Reeves, and then I ran the West Coast system for a couple years. If somebody starts out with Lamar running the spread system, then he will be very successful and he will be better than me in the National Football League. And it turned out to be true. I still hang my hat on that, and I still believe that. And it's funny because, you know, my coach who I had in Philadelphia, Marty Morningwig, you know, he heard those statements, and he heard that statement, and he knew that I said that for a reason. Next thing you know, he drafts Lamar, and Lamar becomes a Raven. So we talked about that up until this point, you know, up until that point that, you know, this guy could change the game. You just can't make him run the system that, you know, you think he needs to run. Do what, you know, he's done over the past couple years. And, you know, once they did that, Lamar became a different player. And, you know, we'll get used to seeing this, man. Lamar's not going to change. You know, obviously the monkey on his back now is winning the playoff game. So, you know, he's exceeded my expectations, and I expect him to go further.
Back here, first things first. All right, so yesterday was Tom Brady's 43rd birthday. Of all the well wishes he received, this from Michael Strahan trolling Brady about the Pats' Super Bowl 42 loss to the Giants. But you can't troll the GOAT. Brady tweeting back, "Thanks, Mike. Guess we'll just have to run it back on a football field where I still go to work every day." Boom, shots fired. Wild, Tom, it's all fun and games until you realize Brady's right.
I actually have never seen that game. We're still 18-0. I have it on my DVR. I have not watched it yet, so I haven't heard great things, but it's been erased from my memory. Still 18-0 in my book.
That is a great tweet by Brady. That it's his 43rd birthday and the mark of his first good tweet. Good job, Tom. That's a great tweet.
Let's play a little drawing a blank, guys. How about this? A recent report says there are some league insiders who see the Portland Trail Blazers as a threat to upset the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs. Yeah. Now, for those of you who are just joining us, this has been Wild's take for weeks. Has simultaneously been the bane of Nick's existence. Nick, the chances the Blazers could knock off the Lakers in the playoffs are blank.
As I've said many times on the show, I don't want to be prone to hyperbole, so I want to be precise here. Exactly 0%. First of all, I don't believe the Blazers are going to get there. Second of all, if they do get there, I don't know if folks have been paying attention. Trevor Ariza's not in the bubble. So I ask this question to anyone who is out, my friend Charles Barkley, who said, "Oh, the Blazers will beat them." Who is guarding LeBron in that series? Is it Zach Collins? Is it my guy, Carmelo Anthony? Gary Trent Jr., anyone? They have, I don't know that there is a team in the league less equipped personnel-wise to guard LeBron than the Blazers without Ariza. Mario Hezonja, come on down. So Broussard, it's 0%. And I pray you're going to help put an end to this madness.
Well, I'm going to say something I rarely say. I agree with Nick.
There you go.
What? Can we stop it? All right, the Blazers. Look, would the Blazers be a tougher matchup than New Orleans or Memphis or even San Antonio? Yeah, okay, they do have the backcourt. But they have no chance of beating the Lakers. Remember, Portland got swept 2 years ago. Same team, essentially, a little bit different. They added Carmelo. They're more mature. But they got swept by Anthony Davis in New Orleans. You think Anthony Davis with LeBron is going to lose to this Portland team? No, come on. This is embarrassing. Sorry, Wild.
What a betrayal. Broussard has been, it's the whole bit of the show has been me and Broussard against Nick. And this take comes out of nowhere. This is like when Macho Man and Hulk Hogan are there and Macho Man rips his chain, he's bleeding. It's like, what? He
just like that.
Nick,
just like that.
Nick, what time is your radio show today? Nick, what time is your
I'm filling in for Mad Dog today, so it's at 3 p.m.
What time is it at? Wrong, it's at Dame Time, baby. Dame Time's all the time at 3 o'clock. It's Dame Time in Melo. Blazers to the playoffs. I'm the new Blazers fan. Gosh darn it, Broussard.
Look, if you're going to pick a dark horse, you might as well pick the Blazers. Moving on to a rookie showdown last night. Zion And Ja going at it. Zion, after all the whispers of his frustrations with playing time, finished with 23-7-5 and 25 minutes to go along with the win. Ja finished with just 11 points to go along with the loss. So, Nick, Zion and Ja's rookie battle last night was blank.
A sign of things to come, and we're going to talk more about Zion later. This is not a sign of things to come on Ja. Ja was bad, but he's been excellent all year. But Zion, as he continues to play his way back into rhythm, he's basically been a point a minute since he stepped on an NBA court. That's going to continue, so it's a sign of things to come, Broussard.
It was lopsided, and I'm glad, Nick, you didn't go the extra mile and say, I told you, Zion should be Rookie of the Year. It's irrelevant.
I didn't tell you that.
Roy voted. Okay, I'm glad you didn't. I thought you might go there.
There's more show left. Great. Just wait.
I was happy for it. Right. We got time.
Go ahead, Wiles.
We threw up the Grizzlies schedule. When are we going to talk about the Grizzlies are losing it here? This is a big choke job from the Grizzlies. They're 0-3 in the bubble. They've got some tough teams coming up. I mean, I assume the Celtics and the Bucks, maybe the Bucks take that day off and chill and just get ready.
It's
but
tough.
This doesn't look good. They're playing really bad. No one's talking about it.
That loss to Portland was a killer, Jenna. It was a killer.
Good for me and the Blazers.
All right, moving on to the 35-year-old veteran Chris Paul, CP3 showing his veteran smarts last night, drawing the foul down one, just 3 seconds left in regulation. Brilliant move, tugging on the shorts there until you miss one of the free throws, and then you go on to lose in overtime. So, Nick, Chris Paul's sequence at the end of regulation there was blank.
Oh, my God, this pains me to see again. The answer is expensive. And here's why, America.
What? Are you talking about contract?
No, I'm talking... No, Wilds, I got Broussard yelling at me for a Rookie of the Year vote I didn't make. I got you predicting takes and being wrong. Zip it and I'll explain it.
I'm sorry. All right.
Some people, when they gamble, like to do something called an emotional hedge, meaning they bet against what they're rooting for in their heart, so either way they win a little bit. I do the opposite. If I'm rooting hard in a game, I also put money on the game. I really wanted the Thunder to win yesterday, and I needed under 220 points. Do you see what the final score would have been? 110-109, under 220 by one, parlayed with the Thunder on the money line. I win, the Nuggets lose, the Rockets go up in the standings, Chris Paul could clutch, it all continued, and he missed the free throw. He had it. He tricked the refs. He grabs his shorts. He gets the line. I'm going to make hundreds of dollars. And he misses the free throw. And then it goes over because, of course, it goes over because we're at 218 and I lose at 221. There's 5 minutes of overtime and the Thunder lose. It's terrible. It's just awful. And I didn't want this in the
Bring
show.
Bring us back to reality. Let's go. Move
that
on.
That is reality.
That's your reality.
I say it was reminiscent. I hate to say it because CP3 is one of the greatest point guards we've ever seen. But until he has that great clutch moment in the playoffs, whenever he fails, people are going to go back to this. 2014, game five, last 45 seconds. The Clippers have the game and won and the series in control. And CP3 makes two uncharacteristic turnovers, fouls Russell Westbrook on a three-pointer. They lose the game in the series. I hated to see it for CP3. He's a 90% free throw shooter. So every time he fails in the clutch, that is going to be on people's minds.
Okay. Broussard hated to see it so much that he asked the producer to pull up an old clip from years ago and run it on national television. That's how much he hated to see it. I thought it was a savvy move. I'm pro Chris Paul. First of all, the guy's responsible for the entire thing, putting the entire thing in the bubble. I know people are like, hey, Paul, don't lie. That's what he gets for pulling Paul Millsap shorts. No, that's the way real basketball works. It might not be the way you play basketball, where you got to play everything clean. Well, Chris Paul's smarter than everybody. Great job, Chris Paul. He'll make it next time. Go
find it. And by the way, Broussard... After that meltdown, a couple years later, he did hit a buzzer-beating Game 7 shot against the Spurs, just crushing Chris Paul. I mean, I'm mad at him for the money, but come on.
We're moving on. Talk some coaches for a second. Mike Budenholzer and Billy Donovan were both voted NBCA co-coaches of the year yesterday, with Raptors' Nick Nurse finishing one vote shy of being a three-way tie. Probably Kawhi's fault, Nick. So, Wilds, Budenholzer and Donovan being named co-coaches of the year is blank.
You can't have 6% of the coaches in the league be the best coach. Figure out a way to do it. That you got one coach. If that extrapolated out to the real league, that would mean we'd have 30 MVPs, 40-50 players, 6%. We'd have 30 MVPs. So as a suggestion, we know that there's one person on this show with a real vote and one person without a real vote. I vote that, and I have the third vote. I vote that, Nick, you get to break the ties in the Coaches Association Awards. Who do you give the award to?
Neither.
This is
ridiculous. Nick Nurse. And by the way, Broussard, how does Budenholzer get involved here? Nurse, Donovan, Vogel, McMillan, Taylor Jenkins, they all on my fake ballot. That's your 1 through 5. How Budenholzer gets this is beyond me. It's utterly ridiculous, Broussard.
I'm with you. The word is wrong. My official ballot, the real ballot, neither of them was on it. I had Nick Nurse number one, Eric Spoelstra in Miami number two,
sure.
And Taylor Jenkins, as Nick mentioned,
I like
in Memphis
like
number
that.
Three.
On Saturday, two top welterweights, Jamal Shango James and Tomas Delorme, battle for the interim title. The hard-hitting action begins 8 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Back here on First Things First with Chris Broussard, and we're training for a tryout. 35-year-old rapper J. Cole's been putting in some work in the gym recently. I'm not the only one who noticed. The Pistons putting this out there yesterday, tweeting to J. Cole that he should hit them up for a tryout. Nick, is J. Cole making the roster?
No. J. Cole's not making the roster. Did you guys see what he looked like? The full screen right before the video started, you know what he looks like? A 35-year-old dad? Like, this is a ridiculous Wilds. I don't understand why we're talking about this.
Are you dad shaming?
I like it.
What?
Well, this is not great footage of J. Cole.
Dad.
J. Cole cooked people. I just like to open it up. I'll throw Dave East. Jim, let Jim Doan call Dave East up, and we'll get Cam to coach him. Be like a nice Harlem thing. Yeah, let's go.
I've got the perfect solution. Put him in the celebrity game at All-Star Weekend. That's all we need to see of Jake.
Oh, to take Quavo? To take Quavo's crown?
Let him go against Comet and Kevin Hart.
Starting with the West's best. The Lakers took down the Jazz last night, 116-108, clinched the one seed for the first time since 2010. After the game, LeBron with a message for his doubters saying, quote, "They said I couldn't do it. I'll enjoy this one. They said I can't do it. I can just say it feels damn good to be the number one seed in the West for me personally." Nick, obviously a big accomplishment for LeBron, but how important do you think that number one seed is for the Lakers?
Well, I think it's incredibly important for a number of reasons. And LeBron is 100% right. I'm old enough to remember, as is LeBron, oh, yeah, you can do it in the East. But let's see him go through the gauntlet of the West. What he's doing out East, first year out West, fully healthy, and they have the one seed with a week and a half left of the season already locked up. The two best seasons of LeBron's career came with the one seed. The 2013 season, where he had basically the perfect basketball year, the 27-game winning streak, title, league MVP, finals MVP, should have been defensive player of the year, but Broussard and a few other people voted for the wrong guy. Marcus Gasol got it ridiculously. And the 2016 season, when they pulled off the greatest feat in NBA history, coming back from 3-1 down on the 7-3 Warriors, those were one-seeded teams. And the other reason it matters, in my eyes, Broussard, is the Mavs are a real team. Now, I don't think Mavs are going to win their first round series, but there are 7 real teams with stars in the West. Whomever gets the 8 seed is not going to add any resistance. So there's a big difference between 1 and 2, even though you don't get the home games the way you typically would in a normal season, Broussard.
Yeah, I'll give it to you. And that first round is where it matters. And that's it. After that point, the first seed is irrelevant because there's no home court advantage. And look, I'm not mad at LeBron for apparently using these so-called slights as motivation. I love it. Michael Jordan did it. Other players have done it. Yep. That's great. But it's where is this coming from? I don't know that anybody on the planet would have said a prime LeBron James with a prime Anthony Davis couldn't be great in the West. Who would have said that? I mean, really? That's right. Nick, your selective history or memory is it tickles me. Okay? You mentioned LeBron being the one seed. He was also the one seed in 2009 and 2010.
He's 25 years old.
Disappointing. He was still the best player in the world.
25 years old. In 2009, he averaged 39-8-8. 39-8-8 against the Magic. Stop it.
Yes.
This is ridiculous. 25 years old. It's enough.
That team won 66 games and was supposed to be able to win a championship. They won 61 the next
That's
year.
That's great.
Don't leave those out in your one seed.
You're bringing up stuff from Obama's 25, first term.
Nick. What, 25 what, too you young Miles? To win a championship? Why are you saying he's 25? That's like...
What I'm saying is, I wasn't listing every time he'd been the one seed. I was listing every time in the last decade
just
he's been the one seed.
Broussard's
bringing
just
up stuff from administrations ago. You're out here wild saying, going amen from in the choir when Broussard's like, oh yeah, who said they couldn't do it? Broussard said they couldn't do it when he picked the Clippers.
Meanwhile, LeBron's plan is slowly forming shape, so he's doing something right. On to the shaky Sixers now. They barely eked out a win over the Spurs last night. Broussard, this team is so frustrating to me. This Sixers team, another game, another brutal fourth quarter. They gave up, 46 in the fourth in their loss to the Pacers Saturday. They gave up 43 in the fourth to the Spurs last night and barely got the win thanks to Shake Milton. How should the Sixers feel right now heading into the playoffs?
The Sixers just boggle the mind. I mean, look, I've lost all faith in them. I think they're very immature. They're a young, immature team, and this is what you get. You get these strange up and down performances. Great talent. It was great to see Shake Milton hit the shot. And obviously, Joel Embiid gave him love in the huddle and on social media. So that was nice. But as you said, Jenna, the defense has been atrocious. Ben Simmons had some nice passes. But, you know, he and Embiid haven't found a way to excel together. So I think, unfortunately, it's going to be another disappointing postseason run for these Sixers.
Yeah, this isn't it. And everybody knows it. Nick, you know what I think it is? It's like a plane movie. It's like, it's not terrible, but certainly not good, and it's not going to win any awards. You're like, yeah, check it out. It's a good movie to watch on a plane. That's who the Sixers are. They're not going to win any awards. They're a fun little team, but obviously flawed. They'd be great to watch on the plane.
I watched the movie The Gentleman with Matthew McConaughey on a plane this weekend. It actually is very good, and I do
Never
recommend
heard
it to
of
many
it.
People.
I'm sure it's great on a plane.
Okay. Yeah. Quickly, Jenna, I'm just happy for Shake Milton. After what happened in the first game, that final play was clearly drawn up for Embiid. He couldn't get the pass into him. He had the guts to step up and take the shot and nailed it. I'm happy for Shake.
All right,
I'm happy
let's
for
move
the
on.
Blazers. Move the Spurs down a notch.
Talk some rookie report. Zion versus Ja, Pelicans and Grizzlies, and Zion will get the last laugh. Zion finished with 23 points in the win. After the game, Zion said, quote, I feel alive again. All right, Nick, let's jump right in. What'd you make of Zion's performance in this one?
I thought he was excellent. He's clearly not in full basketball shape yet after leaving the bubble for a couple weeks. Despite that, he gave you 23 points, had a career high, 5 assists, had some explosive moments, played most of the fourth quarter. And I don't understand some of the narrative and consternation surrounding Zion Williamson. They're like, oh, his body. Well, what is it going to... Guess what, America? Every single NBA player improved their body from their rookie season to year 4. Like, it's just Zion's going to go in the opposite direction most guys go. Usually guys have to add muscle. We all love Ja. Does anyone think Ja doesn't need to add 10 to 15 pounds of muscle? No, of course he does. Will he? Of course he will. Because everyone other than Kevin Durant, that's a great player, their body changes massively. And that's not shade to Durant. Durant's just a freak of nature and built differently than everybody else. Zion's going to be great. He's going to get in better shape. He's going to lose a few pounds. He's going to get in better condition. I know that, Broussard, because every NBA player ever has. So I don't, he's averaging 22 points in 28 minutes a game this year. He's been awesome. So, yeah, I was happy to see him play, and we know how good he can be when he does play.
Well, it's interesting, Nick. You bring up the naysayers. But I think of everyone that's been out there talking about Zion, the people he wanted to prove something to last night were the Pelicans, not his teammates, but the organization.
That's right.
He clearly went out on a mission. He played angry. I loved it. He was tremendous. As you said, he did played an all-around game. The fact that he took 21 shots in 25 minutes showed that he wanted to go out there and show them, look, I am healthy. Play me. Let me play. I feel alive again. But let me get to your point about the consternation surrounding him. I'm one of those that's a little bit concerned. And here's why, Nick. In high school, he got hurt. At Duke, he got hurt. In summer league, he got hurt. In preseason, he got hurt. He missed most of the season. He comes back from 3.5 months off, can't get through a week straight of practices. Now they bring him back and have him on burst restrictions. That's why everybody's like, does he have to lose weight to be able to play consistently? Because Zion, as great as he is, has not yet shown us that he can play 4 months straight of high-level basketball and stay healthy. That's why there's consternation. It's not a knock on him. It's just like, man, something always keeps him off the court.
But I guess I would say Wilds, despite whatever injury he suffered in high school, he's the number three recruit in his class. And despite when he blew out his shoe at Duke, Wilds, he's the Naismith Player of the Year. And I feel like the Pelicans, Kevin, have been extra cautious this year, and he could have played more under maybe a more, for lack of a better term, liberal organization.
So there's two things. One, when you watch this video, we don't have it queued up perfectly, but this might be it. He falls and his shoe comes off again. Another shoe. There it is. Oh, on the ground. That could be it. That could be it for the year. And everyone's going to look at Alvin Gentry like, why was he out there? The weird thing, and Broussard, you mentioned it, is that they don't feel like they're on the same page. It's a little bit like The Last Dance when Jordan was out and Jordan was like, I want to go play. And like, we're not going to play. And we set him at the last end of the game. The moral of the story is this. Fighting for a playoff position and a minutes restriction do not work together. And however you want to slice it or dice it, those two things are the exact opposite, and no one's going to be happy. I think we should all just, like, take a breath and realize, like, hey, Pelicans aren't actually trying to get into the playoffs and be okay with it.
Well, meanwhile, it was fun to watch in his 25 minutes. Wait, before we go, I want to show you guys this. This is Cam Newton's first official photo as a New England Patriot. My question to Wilds.
It's awesome.
Which room in your house did you wallpaper with this image? Please be honest.
It's rooms plural. It's all of my kids' bedroom, my wife's and I bedroom, and the spare bedroom. So you come upstairs, I say, which Cam Newton
Very
room
romantic.
Do you want? We actually have a Panthers room. It's like a cool thing. It's like, oh, this is like the Panthers room. So Nick, when the quarantine's over and we want to, you know, you can bring the whole family up here. We'll go to the amusement park. You can sleep in the Cam room. It'd be great.
Oh, you should wear a jersey too. We can watch Patriots games.
Well, speaking of the jersey, I need to extend a thank you to you on behalf of the lady at Chipotle yesterday who gave me extra guac. I gave her the Cam jersey, so she thanked you very much for it.
Broussard, thank you very much. We had a fun day. We're back here tomorrow morning. Gotta go. Stay safe, everyone.